The Athletic.
After a heavy defeat at the weekend, home fans at Stamford Bridge made their feelings clear.
Played and that's offside, so it should be the last action.
Less than a year on from the sacking of Graham Potter, Mauricio Pochettino's Chelsea sit in the bottom half of the Premier League table. So, after spending so heavily on players over the past 19 months, what exactly is owner Todd Bowley's plan for Chelsea? And where does this leave the Pochettino project? I'm Ayoakim Walere. Welcome to the Athletic Football Podcast. All right, let's get into this. Let's talk Chelsea. Here for today's episode, we've got The Athletic's Chelsea writer, Liam Toomey. And also in the studio, we've got commissioning editor for The Athletic, Dom Fifield. Mauricio Pochettino's just finished his press conference. Liam, you were there. First and foremost, what was the mood like?
Yeah, you suffered two defeats in the manner that Chelsea did in the last week. I think you can expect a bit more of an uncomfortable time when the glare of the cameras are on you at Cobham. And I got the feeling when I asked Pochettino in particular about Bel Silva's post on X during the Wolves game, that he was ready for that question. His general demeanour, he seemed quite emotionally measured all season, actually, win or lose. He's very rarely snapped at journalists, only really mildly spiky by standards of recent Chelsea head coaches. Yeah, I didn't see a noticeable difference today, although I don't think I'm breaking any embargoes here by saying when the cameras were switched off and we went into the daily section, there was a bit of an exhale from Pochettino that he'd managed to safely navigate it in his mind, at least.
Well, you talked about Bel Silva. Actually, I was tuning into that press conference, and what did he say about his relationship with Thiago Silva? Because his wife has clearly tweeted about change at Chelsea. Can create a bit of tension, can't it?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, there's the wording of the tweet, which was pretty cryptic, but could easily have been interpreted, and I think it was interpreted by many people, as a call for Chelsea to sack Pochettino. And, you know, if you look at that, I think there are other Chelsea coaches who would have responded in a much different way to the way Pochettino seems to have handled it.
He came today to talk with me. And of course, do you know me, after more than 10 years, how I am? We are very strong coaching staff and very strong in our, you know, way to operate and in the way that we are. And of course, he came to talk, we talk. And I think I don't want to, that was private, and that's it.
How's your relationship with Thiago generally?
It's very good. Well, I think so. It's excellent. Because, yes, I think always was good from the beginning. You can see all my press conference or my interview in the way that always I was talking about him.
We've seen some evidence to the contrary on the pitch this year, some of which is in our latest piece on The Athletic. There has been tension between Pochettino and Silva in games. We've seen it. And I think some of that is down to a difference in the way, a difference of views, shall we say, in the way the football strategy should be in games, the defensive strategy, because you've got Silva, who's clearly a veteran, clearly physically more limited than he has been. Maybe his instinct is to drop off a yard or two, be a bit more cautious. Pochettino wants to play this front foot high line style. So that has been, flashpoint's probably too strong a word, but it has been the cause of some animated exchanges, shall we say, on the pitch. But off the pitch, Pochettino was keen to stress today they've got a good relationship. Now, if Silva is on the bench against Villa, then we might get a different message. I'm always inclined to go with actions rather than words in these situations, but Pochettino's words were pretty much what you'd expect them to be on it.
Think about the Abramovich era where you had big dogs like Terry, Drogba, Lampard, senior players. Thiago Silva's like, what, 39 years old, the main senior player in his team. Do you think he has the same kind of influence as those guys would have had in terms of connection to leadership, connection to manager?
No. I mean, it doesn't exist in the same way that it did back then. I mean, that core sort of unit under Abramovich through successive managers, if things were going wrong on the pitch, or they felt things weren't going right on the training ground, they would make sure that got back to the owner, and they'd probably tell them, you know, in person, that they weren't happy. That simply doesn't exist in the same way with Thiago Silva, who is, as you say, the most senior member of this squad. He's not the only experienced member of staff. I mean, you've got people like Raheem Sterling on the books, and even others like Ben Chilwell, who have got plenty of international caps. Lots of these players are senior internationals of some standing, including World Cup winners. But the problem with Thiago Silva is he's from a previous era. He is defined by what he's done at Chelsea, but also what he's done at previous clubs, at PSG, at Milan, etc. With Brazil. He's 39. He's in the last 6 months of his contract, and his career, a glittering career, is in the tail end. It's edging down towards conclusion, let's put it like that. So even that undermines how much standing he would have and how much, you know, power, clout he would have behind the scenes when going to the owners to, if he had any complaints about how things were being done. I do find it a very bizarre situation that his wife comes out and tweets about it. But you know, there's lots that is bizarre about the modern day Chelsea and what they've become. So maybe just that extra layer of intrigue in there shouldn't come as that much of a surprise.
Can you give us a summary from your perspective of where you think the club is right now with this so-called project?
Well, I think there are really two things you're talking about, aren't there, when you say the word project? There's Project Pochettino, which has been in the headlines of our pieces this week, which is what's happening with this team on the pitch. And then there's the bigger Bowley Clear Lake project, which is the way that they've constructed this squad at vast expense. And the returns on that so far and projecting into the longer term. And I think where we are is that both of those projects are being questioned like never before outside Chelsea. And so the point of the piece that we have on The Athletic now was to try and look from all possible angles, Pochettino, ownership, players, supporters, all the key parties in a situation like this, as to how they're navigating the situation, how they're navigating this scrutiny and this testing moment. You know, the sense we got is that Pochettino is trying to keep everyone together. And I think that was kind of the message he was trying to deliver in his press conference today as well. The players, as we mentioned, it's not really the kind of dressing room that would go against the manager, you know, or actively work to bring about their downfall. I mean, it's more likely they might just tune him out, given the personality profile of the players in the squad. And some of them, you know, we've reported some of the newer signings privately express regret at the long-term contracts that they've signed, and that this grand project that was pitched to them has not materialised so far. There's also a sense within Chelsea that in some quarters, this squad has a bit too much entitlement and too little hunger. So there are different views as to how the blame should be divided for where Chelsea are. And as far as ownership are concerned, clearly this can change very quickly because we saw that last season with Graham Potter, but there are no indications that Mauricio Pochettino is imminently going to lose his job. Equally, there are no indications to us that Laurence Stewart or Paul Winstanley are facing greater scrutiny as sporting directors, despite the fact that there are quite a lot of fans that we hear from who want them to be. And there isn't, you know, this sense of overwhelming doubt from the ownership in the direction they've taken. They still believe in the long term that this will work, despite the fact that the early returns have not been good, and the last week in particular has been very, very bleak. But as far as the fans are concerned, I mean, that situation looks pretty broken with the match-going support. There is almost no faith in Pochettino. There's no real connection with this group of players. And there's no real trust in the ownership to turn this around in the long term, but also even to run the club the way that a lot of fans would like to see the club run. So that may be the biggest problem as we're projecting forward here. How do Chelsea repair their relationship with the fans who turn up every week?
You know, I'm looking at, if we can, a little positive. There's a cup final later on this month. There's two questions. Is this a squad that looks like they're ready to take on a Liverpool team that look really equipped to, you know, play really good football? Could doing something there really turn these fans around that actually there's something here that we can latch onto?
Well, look, it needs that. It needs a fan base that has grown used to competing and winning trophies to claim this first trophy of the Bowley Clear Lake era. Are they capable of doing it? Well, I mean, actually, their games with Liverpool this season have probably shown the two extremes of what the modern Chelsea is. Right at the start of the season, they performed pretty well at home to Liverpool in the first Premier League fixture of the campaign, and it looked actually quite a promising performance. Got a 1-1 draw, played well, could have won it. And then last week is a sort of the latest nadir, you know, a team that looked more rudderless, looked naive, and was sort of stampeded by Liverpool's rampaging Liverpool that were, you know, at that point looked as if they were the best team in the division by a distance. Obviously, that's slightly changed after the result of the weekend. But I would argue that this is what Chelsea are. They're a mid-table team. Mid-table teams are defined by their inconsistency. And that is what Chelsea are. A few weeks ago, if you've gone back this time last week, you know, okay, there was a bit of frustration that Aston Villa hadn't been seen off in the FA Cup fourth round, but Chelsea had been on a pretty decent run. They won 5-7 or something like that, Liam, wasn't it? They'd done quite well. They looked as if things were coming together. Okay, they weren't like, you know, hammering teams, and there were periods within those games, even in those victories, that they were deeply unconvincing. But they were achieving results. And then just as you think that they're going somewhere, an inconsistent team, a naive team, a young team that's been thrust together in a relatively short space of time, unravels again. It gets hammered at Anfield. And then on Sunday, their performance against Wolves, well, I mean, they were done consistently by Neto, by Wolves' counters. They didn't look as though they could cope. They looked like a team that was creaking under the pressure of expectation, looked a bit lost. But again, that happens with young, naive teams that have just been thrust together in a short period of time. The problem, some of the disconnect with the fans, I mean, look, Chelsea fans have absolutely got the right to be disgruntled with the way things are going and the fact that the Champions League football seems miles off at the moment when they've grown used to it for so long. But they're in a cup final. They have an opportunity. If they win that, I don't think the dissenting voices will go away, because let's be honest, their run-in is going to be full of the same kind of inconsistencies that we've just witnessed in the last few weeks. That is where they're at.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep. You heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
We've reported as well, realistically, that, you know, they're building this club, or the idea is to build this club to sort of be competitive for when the likes of Pep and Klopp move on. I mean, obviously, Klopp's definitely pushed that one much quicker on us than we'd expect. But with all this happening, can you have a bit of sympathy for someone like Poch? I mean, who can really turn something like this around? I mean, you're literally starting from scratch, but then you've got a fan base that expects instant results. But what are you working with to start with, Dom?
Well, yeah, and there is a sort of element of mystery there, isn't there? Because they've obviously taken the plunge and brought players of potential, not the finished articles, really. The success rate on a signing, even if you spend, you know, £100 million, the success rate is generally, what, 60-40, 70-30? Even if you do all your extensive scouting and you've got your data to back it up, I mean, they don't always work out. So given the sheer number of players that Chelsea have brought in, that means that some of them are simply not going to make the grade, ultimately, in terms of challenging for the title, which is what Chelsea aspire to do. I actually thought that was really fascinating, the stuff about Klopp and Guardiola that's mentioned in the piece, because you see that and you instantly think, wow, that's unbelievably naive, really. I mean, what about the other, well, at the moment, the other 11 clubs? Well, 9 clubs are above us,
yeah.
Apart from Liverpool and City. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and they're going to have a say in this as well. But if you're going into it utterly convinced that the signings you have made will pay off in time, that they do have the pedigree, or they will prove to have the pedigree, and they've got the potential and the talent there, and they can be honed and well coached, and develop and upgrade, etc., from year on to year, then I guess at some level there's a logic to it. I mean, you know, I think most of the Premier League has sort of been clinging to the hope that Manchester City post Pep Guardiola will not be quite the force that they are with him. And Liverpool, you can put in the same bracket. So not least because you've seen what's happened to other clubs when a talismanic figure at the top has left. So I can sort of understand the logic, but I do think that the naivety is born of the fact that there are so many other clubs that will be targeting that as a moment when they can click into gear and hopefully have a team that's ready to challenge. But yeah, you're right. Pochettino is... It's a really difficult job to take on. Really, really difficult. It's an unbelievable job to take on when you're effectively given a 2-year contract with an option of a 3rd year, because all your players are signing 7 or 8 year contracts, and you've actually
not much faith in you, is there?
No, I mean, and getting those instant rewards is so difficult in such a competitive division when you've still got Klopp, you've still got Guardiola in there, and their teams are quite clearly streets ahead of where yours is. So yeah, impossible. Throw in the Spurs factor, he's an ex-Tottenham manager. I mean, there are, as was mentioned again in the piece, I think in one of Liam's sections, there are certain parts of the Chelsea fan base that will never accept Pochettino, really, because he was a Tottenham manager and he was loved at Tottenham, and it took Tottenham to a Champions League final. It was a bold appointment in that regard.
I've actually been surprised since Pochettino came in that his Spurs past didn't become a factor earlier with the supporters as a whole. I thought that baggage would become a stick to beat him with right from the start if Chelsea didn't hit the ground running, which they didn't. But I partly think things got so bad last season that Chelsea fans in stadiums were actually largely prepared to look quite hard sometimes, really squint to try and see the green shoots in these performances, even if results weren't what they wanted, because last season was just so irredeemable in so many ways. But the way things are going now, it feels like it's at a point where it's very difficult for Pochettino to get it back. And that, I think that's even more the case when you consider he's never really made much of an effort to try and build a rapport with the Chelsea fans. You know, that there's been none of this taking the players over to the support after a 2-2 draw at home, the way Jurgen Klopp memorably did after one of his first Liverpool games, to really try and build that bond and connection. Maybe Pochettino's not that type of guy. Maybe he was wary from the start that his Spurs association would mean that wouldn't play well. But for whatever reason, he stood off quite a lot. And now I think it's at a point where you probably don't want to go over there because you don't know what you'll be subjected to with things as they are. It doesn't feel like it'll be very easy for him, whatever happens from here, to get any real credit with Chelsea's support.
I'm going to put a name in the ring right now, and a name that's jobless at this moment in time. a certain Jose Mourinho.
Dom's shaking his head like you would believe. If we talk about bringing the fans back together, if we talk about United, this club,
remember 2015.
There is one special one, Dom.
Remember 2015. Remember what happened in December 2015. Just remember. I lived through that.
Well, and remember what happened afterwards as well, because, you know, I think when the Chelsea fans are chanting for Abramovich, that's one thing, because I think a large swathes of them still feel pretty, you know, unadulterated gratitude towards him. Clearly, his relationship beyond his reputation beyond Chelsea is complicated, to put it mildly, but within that, the walls of that stadium, his approval ratings are still very high for everything he did with the club. Mourinho is a different case because he left Chelsea. He needled the club many times as an opponent, as Mourinho is wont to do. He then went off and managed Spurs. So I didn't actually register during the Wolves game the Mourinho chance. I'm not saying they didn't happen. I believe the people who said they did. I don't think they were quite as loud as the Abramovich ones that we've heard on several occasions since the change of ownership, and were particularly loud in that game. But in both cases, I think it's more of an expression of protest at the present than a longing or than a genuine hope for the past to come back, because they know Abramovich isn't coming back. And I think they know that while you can't put it at 0%, I think it's very unlikely that Mourinho will have an act three at Chelsea.
All right, let's move on. Let's look at Poch and Potter in many respects. We crunched the numbers, and you look at Potter after 23 games, which is currently where Chelsea are at this moment in time, 10th position, 32 points, plus one goal difference. Under Poch, 23 games, 11th position, 31 points. Marginal differences. But how can you compare Poch's tenure and Potter's tenure?
That actually, that kind of statistical comparison that you just went through, that's one of the few things that will get Pochettino's back up, as we've seen over the last couple of weeks. He doesn't like that being put to him. And he has responded pretty spikily because I think he doesn't like the implication that there's a complete lack of progress. And he draws a clear line between the squad last season and the squad that he has this season. And I understand that because, you know, the turnover continued last summer, even more with outgoings than incomings. And he has a very different group to work with, an even younger group than Potter did. And there are, I wouldn't say more or less challenges, but just different ones. What I would say is the common thread between Potter and Pochettino is I think they've both had very challenging conditions, in spite of the spending, in some cases because of the spending, to deliver on, if not the internal expectations of Chelsea, then certainly the external ones. This season, Pochettino's had a big, big injury crisis in the first half of the year to navigate. The worry for him now is, I checked the injury list before the press conference today. It's become a rite of passage. With our Chelsea reporters now, half an hour before the press conference, we check through the injury list posted on the Chelsea website, which at times has had the look of an athletic long read. All the names that are in the midst of their rehabilitation. At the moment, it's only five properly injured players, so that situation is finally easing. If results don't improve with it, then I think the case. Well, Pochettino's case for progress gets a lot harder to argue. Right now, I think he can say, you know, Potter's situation was a completely different one. Same club, but very different situation. And I think you have to judge the two separately. But if the conditions get more favourable for him in the next few weeks, chiefly with injuries, which it looks like they're doing, results have to come with that. Otherwise, he will be taking even more fire from outside the club, and I think under increased scrutiny within it.
Super quickly, in your piece, you also spoke about how the owners potentially felt that the timing of sacking Potter was a bit of a mistake. Can you just elaborate on that very quickly?
I think there's a sense that making a change as radical as that, making a decision as radical as that in the midst of a season is not ideal. And the way last season played out bore that out, because things got worse, not better, in Frank Lampard's caretaker spell. And that wasn't necessarily down to him. It was that the conditions even got even worse. And once Chelsea went out of the Champions League, it felt like everyone at the club collectively let go of the rope for the rest of the season. So you can never completely rule anything out. We're still getting the measure of these new Chelsea owners, but I would say it's more likely that a big decision will be made on Pochettino one way or the other in the summer rather than before. I think things would have to get considerably worse than they are now to shift that dial towards making a change sooner, because there is no succession plan at this point. You'd be back in the caretaker hunt, and that doesn't seem to have much upside for Chelsea. Pochettino will have 1 year left, one guaranteed year at the end of this season. There would have been an evaluation anyway, because it's very rare to let a coach go into the final guaranteed year of their deal. You either extend them or you part ways. So he would have been evaluated anyway. I think with things as they are, he will be evaluated. League position will be part of that, but it will also be, is the team progressing or individual players progressing? Is there a sense that the club is moving towards where it wants to go? And if the answers to those questions don't favour Pochettino, then they may well say goodbye. But I think it would have to get a lot worse for that to happen in the next couple of months.
You're listening to the Athletic Football Podcast with Ayo Akimole.
Let's move to matters on the pitch, because Chelsea have conceded 4+ goals in consecutive league matches for the second time under Mauricio Pochettino, something that actually hadn't happened since December 1989 prior to his arrival, obviously. So with that in mind, what do the numbers actually say about why the Blues are underperforming on the pitch? Well, let's get our data expert, Mark Carey, to explain more.
It feels like it's the same headline every time you look at Chelsea's form in front of goal, that they often do work the ball into good areas, but they simply aren't clinical enough in those crucial moments. And a simple look at the numbers will show this. So only Everton have underperformed more when comparing their goals scored with their expected goals. Chelsea have scored 7 goals fewer than expectation based on this metric. I think as much as anything, it's also worth talking about the decision-making in crucial moments for Chelsea. That, you know, we can look at their quality of chances with expected goals, but for me, it's the shots that aren't taken. I think it's the passes that aren't executed and the runs that aren't made that all contribute to this dysfunctioning attack. And, you know, while it's tricky to quantify in the numbers, there's so many examples of those issues occurring across the season. At the other end, things aren't much better for Chelsea. They've conceded 39 goals so far this season, and that's 17 more than Graham Potter's side did last season for the same number of match days, which isn't great reading. And they've conceded 4 goals or more in 4 different Premier League games this season, and that's their most in a single league campaign since the 1990-91 season. They've conceded 4 goals or more in consecutive league games for a second time under Mauricio Pochettino, which is something that hadn't happened since December 1989 prior to his arrival. So plenty of records that Chelsea fans won't want to hear. And maybe beyond tactical reasons, I think the obvious narrative as well is that Chelsea is simply a really young side who have just got very little experience of playing with each other. And when looking at their average age, which is weighted by the minutes played this season, they have a 25.1 year old average team age, and that's the youngest in the Premier League, even accounting for the fact that you've got a 39 year old Thiago Silva in the team as well. So, you know, I'm not sure what the remedy is, but I think it's clear that Chelsea need to improve in both boxes, and the numbers show that.
Doesn't make good reading for Pochettino at all. Right, let's move on, because I'm interested in the leadership, Dom. Do we have a sense of this current leadership under Boehly, and especially with co-owner Egbali?
I mean, when they took over, Todd Boehly was front and centre of the new ownership group, the consortium, and you know, you couldn't move at Stamford Bridge for not seeing Todd Boehly everywhere. He was omnipresent. That has changed. That's undoubtedly the case. Egbali. I think quite early on, Liam can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think we got the sense quite early on that actually the real power behind the throne was Egbali. Throughout this whole process, the last few years, I mean, you'll still see media companies, possibly we're guilty of it as well, referring to this as very much Todd Bowley doing this and Todd Bowley doing that. I'm not sure Todd Bowley is doing anything like that at the moment, really, to that extent. I think it's Egbali who is the real power behind this throne. He's the more influential at the moment. And I think there was a conscious decision, certainly this year, after Bowley had been the interim sporting director initially, that this season he was going to step back a bit from it all. And maybe that explains why we don't see him quite often, as often these days at Stamford Bridge. I think he was at the Fulham game. He was at a match in December as well, Brighton game in December as well. He was around. And has been pictured at Stamford Bridge watching those matches. But Egbali seems to be present more often. And I suppose that has stoked these sort of suggestions that there is a split, maybe that maybe they don't see quite eye to eye on issues. And I mean, Chelsea have pushed back pretty hard on that in this piece as well, and argued that, you know, you go to any major corporation at right at the top, if there are shut together a few billionaires, I'm sure they're not necessarily going to see eye to eye on everything, which I think is fair, absolutely fair. But this is football, and I think the scrutiny is on it more. We are looking for the visibility. We're looking to see these guys to get an idea of how committed they are to this or to that idea. The strategy apparently remains that they remain on the same page and that they're pushing forward and they have faith in the structure that they've put in place with Winstanley, with Stewart, more recruitment people coming in the next few weeks, we're told. That they've made an awful lot of changes behind the scenes. I mean, we don't notice that so much, but for people working at Chelsea, it's been sweeping changes since the takeover. I mean, radical changes, long-standing members of staff departing and new guys in. And I suppose that in itself brings its own issues. I mean, these guys are learning how an elite football club works, and they're all being thrust in together as well, in the same way that the players are out on the pitch. So there's teething trouble everywhere. And I think that's contributed to this sort of sense of chaos that we're spying. But yeah, I mean, it's another level of intrigue in it. And the fact that we don't see the more recognisable of the two co-owners at games quite so often has probably, yeah, it's been seized upon by people as a sign that things aren't going brilliantly.
Okay, right. Let's finish on positives, or a positive. Chelsea have definitely got a decent record against, you know, the current top six. You know, I think they've only lost twice against the current top six, which is a good thing. And they've definitely got Liverpool coming up in the Carabao Cup final. Can we just finish on someone who doesn't seem to be fazed by much of this chaos in Cole Palmer, Liam? You know, he seems to pop up at really key times for Chelsea. And if they've got a chance in that League Cup final, he has to be instrumental.
Yeah, he appears to be the one who keeps his head while all around him are losing theirs. Whatever's happening, he just plays the same way. And, you know, in certain games, he hasn't got the ball as much. His impact has maybe been in and out, but he's generally contributed something, and that's reflected in his goal and assist tallies. And when he's had the opportunity to be decisive for Chelsea, he's generally taken it, with the exception of that first leg against Middlesbrough. He's a really impressive player. I think he's really, really smart. I think we've spoken a bit before on this podcast about how he fits into Pochettino's pressing structure from the front, how intelligent he is. He seems to have this superpower to get opponents to give him the ball in the penalty area. It's really impressive to watch. He's just always in the right position. And he's really good at operating in between the lines. But more than that, you know, he came to Chelsea not just to be one of many signings. He came to Chelsea to be, in his mind, the main man. He wanted to be a big figure at this club. And he has been from day one. Now, you can say the bar to assume that status has been historically low for Chelsea, given where this team is. But his performances have still been by far the brightest spark over the last 2 to 3 months. And I think Pochettino will be really hoping it continues in these next few games.
Brilliant. Well, gents, thanks so much for joining us. Liam, Dom as well. And make sure you leave us a rating and also review the podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We are back tomorrow.
The Athletic.